paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. I'm Dr. Richard Schertz.
And I'm Jim Russ.
And it is getting cold out there these
days. I know,
isn't
it?
Yeah, it's cold. But, you know, the technology field never gets cold.
Oh, it's always hot.
It's always, always hot.
Mm-hmm.
We had another virus is out there attacking Microsoft, the Dooku virus. It's attacking one of the day zero vulnerabilities. And Anonymous has declared that they're going to make attacks starting February 5th today.
So we have time to plan for this.
Against various people that have crossed them. Of course, Anonymous is this group of activist hackers called hacktivists that grew out of 4chan that we talked about last week.
Mm-hmm.
Today we're going to talk about a man who was, many call him the man who started the field in artificial intelligence, John McCarthy. He died this last week, and we'll give a review on what his accomplishments were in the area of AI, artificial intelligence. And then we have many tools are being used by Iran and Syria to sort of track what their citizens are doing, and then they make arrests. And the tools that are being used to track it on the internet, track internet traffic, are made by Western companies, and now these companies are feeling the heat because many feel that they should not have sold those pieces of gear to those companies.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, it was a very, very full mailbag this week.
You need, like, a team of mules
yes.
to drag the mailbag
oh,
in.
Oh, I know. So we had to winnow it down.
Okay. So we should do this then.
Yes.
There's a letter in your mailbox.
See, that wasn't quite the segue that I was expecting for.
That is really excellent.
Thank
yes.
you so much.
Well, we have an email from a listener in Bethesda.
Mm-hmm.
Dear Dr. Schertz, I'd like to clean up my laptop. My OS, my operating system is Microsoft Windows XP. I bought my computer in September 2006, so it's about 5 years old. That's about the normal recycle time for computers, actually, 5 years. Every five
really?
Years, probably technology's moved on enough that you would replace. That's a typical replacement time for computers in business. And so it probably makes sense to replace it after 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
She says, I have an 80 gigabyte hard drive and 2 gigabytes of RAM. See, you can't even get an 80 gig hard drive anymore. That's so small.
Yeah.
It's grown dramatically. She says, I have icons all over my desktop, and I don't even know what they're about anymore. Now, what's the best method to get rid of all the junk on my laptop without screwing up something? To speak about it technically.
Mm-hmm.
I did a defrag recently, and that really didn't improve the performance much. Is it time to break down and buy a new laptop? What are your recommendations? What kind of a laptop makes sense? Should I get it now or should I get it later? And by the way, I also got a new laptop at work, a Fujitsu Lifebook. What do you think of that kind of laptop? Well, listener in Bethesda, let's look at what you've got. She sent me the full specs of what she had. An 80 gigabyte hard drive probably means that you could be running out of hard drive space after 5 years, I would think, especially if you put much music on your site. I mean, because your hard drive does fill up over time with all of these updates and everything, and 80 gigs is probably getting pretty full after 5 years. So it may be that you're running out of hard drive space. So I would check the disk capacity. You can right click on the disk and you can look at the properties, and it will tell you how full the hard drive is. I would check for that first. And of course, you've just done a defrag, which and when you get very close to filling up your hard drive, your files get fragmented, and so the defrag would be the problem. Now, what actually slows down Microsoft systems, Microsoft XP, Microsoft Vista systems over time, is that the registry gets corrupted. Now, the registry is actually a database. It's a database that when every time your computer boots up, it goes to this database and it configures itself from the database. So the registry keeps track of what hardware is in the computer, so it configures itself correctly. Anytime you install software, it actually, if you have to load up, preload any files, it keeps track of that. And so the registry really is a configuration file, and it's just a database. And that gets corrupted over time. And so what happens is you end up having entries in your registry that actually aren't used. This normally happens when you install software, you delete software. Maybe your machine came with a lot of crapware on it, and you know that this is stuff that you had a 30-day that they installed it, but it was only good for 30 days, and then you had to buy it. So mm-hmm. they basically used it as a way to sell stuff. And I think this was a Dell computer, and I think back in 2006, Dell did have a lot of crapware on their machines.
Uh-huh.
I don't know about today. And so when you uninstall that, frequently the software does not fully uninstall, and it leaves your registry corrupted. So you should use a registry cleaner. The one that I like the best is Registry Mechanic. And you can download it from PC Tools, and it's actually, since they keep updating it with new registry items, it costs $29 a year to keep it going. And I just run this Registry Mechanic periodically. And the first time I ran it, I probably found several thousand registry errors. And you can see you get all these registry errors. Your computer just kind of slows down. It's mm-hmm. looking for files that aren't there. And it just slows things down. And so that's what I would do. I would check that. I would make certain that you've got enough hard drive space. Then I would check your registrars to kind of clean things up. I'd also go through and uninstall anything that you're not using, because it had a lot of crapware on it, probably. Just uninstall it and get rid of it. And you can actually do that. Rather than just have it hanging around. And you go through a proper uninstall on everything that you've got there. You can also go through and do disk maintenance, and that will delete all temp files and any other files on your hard drive in case you're running out of hard drive space. And so these are ways that you could tune up your computer. I notice you only have 2 gigabytes of RAM. If you would double that RAM to 4 gigs of RAM, it would probably speed your computer up. 2 gigs is really marginal. So if you want to keep the machine, and you could keep it, even though it's 5 years old, and you clean up your registry and you remove all the unused software, and you increase your RAM from 2 gigs to 4 gigs, I think that would actually speed it up quite nicely. And RAM is really cheap now. When you bought it in 2006, RAM was much more expensive, and so typically your motherboard might have 2 slots, and so you have 2 1-gig RAM cards in there. So if you want to go to 4 gigs, you're going to have to probably remove the RAM that's in there and then put in 2 2-gig RAM cards. You'll have to look at your motherboard configuration, and you can go to the Dell site and do that. Now, as for buying a new I also noticed that in 2006 you paid $1,700 for this laptop. I mean, that's
a lot of money.
That's a lot of money. Mm-hmm. An equivalent laptop today you could get for around $500.
Uh-huh.
So,
yeah.
So I think now if you want to buy a new laptop, this is really a good time to do it, because they just before Christmas have got all of these sales,
mm-hmm.
trying to push it. And all the new models come out, all the sales come out. So this is it's a good time to buy it during the holidays. Now, if you want to get a laptop that's actually a very good value, buy last year's model. So you get the 2010 laptop, and it's a lot cheaper. And unless you are into the screaming game business, the capacity of that machine a year ago is certainly going to handle just normal office applications. Mm-hmm. So that's usually what I do. I just get one year older, and you save about probably 30 or 40% in price.
Not bad.
So it's actually a good deal. I would probably, just because I like to get new things, I would probably buy a new laptop. But then I would also try to get this laptop going quickly and running quickly, and then I'd have a backup. Now, when you buy the new laptop, the other question you want to ask, and many times people get laptops that weigh too much. You see, if it's a desktop replacement, which means you never carry it around or take it on a trip, then you want to get a nice big screen. And of course, the bigger the screen, the heavier the laptop.
Right.
If you're going to carry it around a lot, I mean, I really would advise you to get a smaller screen. Maybe, you know, instead of these really big screens, get a smaller screen that's easy to carry around. And then weight is really the issue there. So if you want to get a laptop which is ultra light, you're going to pay more for it. So like if you get like the Sony Vaios, which are very light machines, or if you want to get one with a solid state drive, which is even lighter yet, you're getting up to this $1,500 or $1,600 range. But if you don't care about the weight and you get something a little heavier, you can go down to around the $600 range. Now the other thing, if you are actually going to use this laptop and you're traveling around, you might want to look at battery life. So the smaller screens actually have longer battery life, mm-hmm. because it's, you know, this doesn't take as much juice to run the screen. So you have to decide what you want to do with it. Now, if you're a gaming person, then you'd want to have, of course, probably a dual core processor or a dual core processor. You'd want to have a very high end graphics card built into the system. Actually, the graphics is built onto the motherboard, so that you can do some parallel processing in the graphics area. But if you're just using it for word processing, you don't have to worry about that, and you can just save a little bit of money. Now, as far as this Fujitsu Lifebook, Fujitsu's a nice product. They really haven't penetrated the home market very much. They've really gone after the business market. So it's a very good utilitarian machine. These Fujitsus, they've got them. They go all the way from 600 to 1700. And they're okay. There's nothing really bad about them, but they really have not penetrated the home market that much. Now we got an email from B. Dear Dr. Schertz, I recently attempted to set up a Facebook account.
Ruh-roh.
At the end of the screen that walked me through the fields, I had to fill out and set up. So I had to fill in some information, and then I clicked submit. Or maybe I click save. I really don't know what I click. And then Facebook said it was downloading all of my contacts.
Oh.
Holy cow. It was downloading my personal contact list. I clicked cancel, or maybe I was able to close the browser window. I believe that's what I did. Now, tonight when I logged onto my email account, I'd used the same profile name that I had for Facebook, and I got an email from Facebook saying that I hadn't finished the registration. I need to go back in and finish it, and they gave me a code to actually finish it. Now, actually, I don't intend to finish it, but explain to me how Facebook was able to download my contacts, and what's the big wow of Facebook anyway? I don't get it. I listen to your show weekly and really like it. Best, B. Well, B, many of these social networking sites, Facebook included, LinkedIn does it, they like to get your contact, your email contact list, because then what they do, they try to send out friend notices to anybody on your contacts, and they try to get you connections within that social media network. And the more that they can integrate you into the social media network, the better it is. But they also will send out emails to friends who don't have an account on LinkedIn or Facebook to try to get them to join it. So now how they actually do this, in the process of logging on, they ask you for your username and password of your email account. Now, the only way they can download your contacts is if you provide that information. So in mm-hmm. that form that you filled out, you probably gave them the username and password of your email account, and they just go there and do it. You are never required to give this information. Mm-hmm. I never give this information. I never let them touch the contact list in my email account at all.
Tricky little devils, aren't they?
They are. Now, they have all these disclaimers. They say, we'll use it just one time, and then we delete it, right. And I actually don't believe it. Now, what's the big wow of Facebook? Well, it turns out that Facebook has become the new public photo album. And so a lot of people, instead of like, you know, you go on your vacation, instead of like sending pictures of your vacation to 20 of your closest friends, you simply have a Facebook account and you allow your 20 closest friends to be friend you on your Facebook account, and you upload the pictures to Facebook and they can all see it. And so it's a very good way to share pictures. And you can make your page private in that you can say you will only allow your friends to see the photos. Now, the problem is, and this is why people have been so critical of Facebook, is that the privacy shield is not that good.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you might say, I only want my friends to see it, but unknown to you, it also lets the friends of your friends see it. And so these are people you don't even know. And then it might allow the friends of the friends of the friends to see it. And the other thing that Facebook does, they give access to your data to various businesses and various other applications, and they actually sell that. They actually make money on that. And so you can't really trust the privacy of Facebook. So I don't actually use Facebook as a picture album or a photo album, but many people do. And that's really the big wow. And it is change the way that people communicate. When I set up a Facebook account, the thing that amazed me, within about 5 days of setting up my account, I had made contact with about two-thirds of my high school classmates within just a few days. Mm-hmm. And I had no idea where these guys were living or anything, and they were just all on Facebook, and we'd put down what high school we went to. And then Facebook then searches out that information and suggests friends people who you may know who went to your same high school. So all of a sudden, I'd see in my suggested friends listing people from high school. And it only took a few days, and then I made friends with a few of them, and then they were also friends of other people from high school. So there's like a web of friends that I got into, and within 3 or 4 days, I made a connection. And that's the big deal with Facebook.
Yeah, you know what? But I've had a major life change recently, and mm-hmm. so I went on. I had a Facebook page, but I added some stuff to it and friended a few people, and I just, what a giant waste of time. There is just so much nonsense going on
there
on
there is. I don't actually spend any time on Facebook, but many people do, and it's become a pastime almost.
Yeah, what a shame.
Yeah, well, that was a great email.
Hey, by the way, we have a Facebook page here that people can
oh yeah, in fact I am monitoring the Tech Talk Facebook page. You go to, well, thank you. Now that's why we have a professional in the studio, because
that's called a segue.
That's right. And you go to facebook.com/techtalkonline, and I'm monitoring the page right now,
so
as we speak.
Not on Facebook, really, but he's kind of on Facebook.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, never mind.
That right, so is exactly
back
right.
Back to the mailbag.
Now, we got an email from Jim. I want to explore some new interests that I have relating to web design and photography. Need some advice. How does one register a URL? Does it cost anything? And how do you start a blog? Thanks, Jim. Well, you can get a domain name, Jim, for around $35 a year. I mean, you can get them for as cheap as $20 a year from some registrars, but the average price is around $35 a year. Probably the cheapest place to get a domain name is GoDaddyGot.com. And, you know, you've seen all of their Super Bowl ads. GoDaddy.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they actually are a pretty good registrar. And at GoDaddy, I think it might only be $20 a year. So what you do is you go to GoDaddyGot.com, and they're authorized to, you know, to sell domains for a number of the, like, .com, .net, and several of the other ones. You go there, and you do a search to see whether the domain name that you want is available. And if it's available, then you can go ahead and buy it, and you can buy it for 1 year, or you might get it for 5 years at a reduced rate, and then they'll send you notice, and you can keep renewing it as wherever you go, and your domain name can be as long or as short as you want. Now, once you get your domain name, you actually have the right to use it, but it's not on the internet until it's assigned. Until it's actually listed in the domain name system and it's actually assigned an IP address. So you've got to get an internet service provider to give you a web page.
Okay.
And what you do is you go to an internet service provider, and usually they will then host your website for $50 a year or something like that. And what you would want to do is you get something that you get the cheapest hosting option, and then as you build it up and get more traffic, you can get a more sophisticated hosting option. And then once you go to this ISP, they will then register your domain name with the domain name system, and they will then at that point assign it an IP address. And when they register you in the domain name system, then whenever somebody puts in your domain name, the domain name system then will then convert that name to a particular IP address, which is then owned by your internet service provider.
Gotcha.
And so that it's actually very easy to get a website up and going. And they make it. You can go to a number of ISPs out there, and they make it very easy for you to set up your first one, and they make it really cheap because they want to get you in the door.
Gotcha.
Now, how do you set up how do you start a blog? Well, blogs have been around for a while on the internet. It's basically people will post their thoughts each day. It's like a log. It's a web log, actually.
Right.
And a web log is called a blog. And you have two choices. One choice is you could use one of the blogging services. And there are a lot of free blogging services out there.
There's one on Google, isn't there?
Yeah, and there's blogspot.com is. And so if you get a blog, if you go to a free blogging service, and there are several of them out there, you can set up your own blog and you're ready to go. But your domain name is going to be like mygreatblog.blogspot.com. Mm-hmm. So you don't own the domain name. You're a subdomain of this other domain name. And then if there's ever... If you ever want to move to a different location from the free blog spot and say move to another domain name, there's no way to transfer all of your readers with you because they're not going to transfer all the people that have befriended your blog. And since you don't own that site, they won't refer anybody to your new location. So once you start there, if you get a very successful blog, and then later on you want to get your own domain name and own it, you really can't transfer it out. So
you could really go back to step one and create a domain name and do the blog there, couldn't you?
You could. You could create your own domain name, and then you need blog software.
Mm-hmm.
And then you would upload the blog software to your web page, and the one blog software that the free one out there that's used by a lot is WordPress.
Mm-hmm.
That is the big one. So you can actually you would get a domain name which would be mygreatblog.com, and then you would then use WordPress to create the blog and post it to that domain.
So
name.
WordPress will walk you through every little step designing.
WordPress would
mm-hmm.
do that.
Okay.
And there are a lot of tutorials on WordPress. It's an excellent blog tool, and it's free. And so,
oh, hey, and just my price.
It's free. But then, of course, you're paying for your domain
right.
name of
yes.
so much a year.
Sure.
And then what happens if you get really a popular blog, you'll have more traffic to it, then you'll have to pay more per month for your site mm-hmm. to handle the traffic. So there we go. I think I'll take one more quick one.
Okay.
From John. He said, I need a new home computer. I'd like a laptop that can use Photoshop. Now, one of my potential projects involves photography. I'm also interested in web design, but I've been a PC guy, but most of my projects are creative. Would I be better off with an Apple product? Well, I'm also looking to upgrade my camera. What are your thoughts on that? I need some for high-end photography. Well, if you want to do design and graphics work, actually an Apple product is probably the best. At Stratford, we've got graphic designers at Stratford, and I ended up buying Apple machines from them. Even though I've got PCs everywhere, my designers is just something, if I have Apple machines, they're just happier.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Because Apple is really set up for the designer. So you've got really two choices on the Apple machines. You can get their what they call the Mac Pro. Now, this is if you are into heavy duty graphics processing or video processing. And the Mac Pro is basically a desktop unit, and you can have like a 12-core processor, an 8-core processor. See, if you've got these huge images, you're doing video processing, you need a lot of parallel processing to crunch the numbers. So if you're very, very high-end on that kind of number crunching, you'd want a Mac Pro. Now, most people that are just doing Photoshop, they don't need 12 cores.
Right.
So you could get the iMac. The iMac is like the whole computer is actually built into the monitor. You can get a 21-inch monitor, and the computer's in the monitor.
Okay.
And the iMac is around $2,000.
How about if John, say, wanted to use a laptop? Is there an Apple product that would work for them?
Yeah, they've got some very good laptops too. Yeah, all of them. All of the Apple products are really set up to manage and process images and graphics just very easily.
So what would be the equivalent of the iMac and a laptop?
In the app, it would be, I don't have it right in front of me. It would be less than $2,000.
Okay.
I mean, the prices on the Apple products have come way down.
Okay.
Now, what I would recommend is just go into the Apple store and play around with it, because they have people at every desk.
Oh, don't they? Yeah, I know.
And you sit there and they'll show you everything, because when you start buying a laptop, a lot of this, it's not really necessarily what's the best technology. It's what a keyboard feels the best.
Right.
What screen size feels the best. So that becomes, you really have to pick it up and feel it. But I'll tell you, the price of the Apple products has been dropping as all computer prices are dropping.
Take it for a test drive, right?
That's right.
Okay.
Then the last question is, and I'll get into more of this next week a little bit, but I'll just briefly mention it on, what about a professional camera? Well, if you at Stratford, we've got a few people that take pictures at Stratford, and we basically always use the SLR, single lens reflex. They have a single lens, and you basically, the viewfinder, you look out through the lens itself, and there's a mirror that comes down, and you look through the lens when you're taking the picture while you're setting up the picture. And when you snap the picture, the mirror pops up, and then the image goes straight back to the focal plane. And so it's a single lens, does both imaging as well as taking the picture. So you do an SLR. But if you're a really professional photographer, you want to have an interchangeable lens.
Right.
That's really the key. And so most of the cheap SLRs, it's like a lens which is just bolted on and you can't change
it.
So you want to get an interchangeable lens system, and then you start looking at different SLR bodies and what lenses. Canon and Nikon are very nice. And then the issue then when you start picking out your single lens reflex body is, A, how many pixels do you want? And some of the better ones have 16 megapixels, which lets you go really large. But then the question is, the better the camera, the faster the recovery time after you snap a picture. So like if you want to take sports pictures, you want to click, 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 only the best cameras can do it that quickly, because if they save that whole image to the thumb, they basically have memory a memory chip that they stick in. If it saves it directly to the memory chip, it's very slow. So in order to get a quick recovery, they have to save it to a buffer, which then from the buffer it copies it to the memory chip. And so when you start picking them out, you have to decide what features you want. But a typical mid-range SLR body is going to be about $1,000.
Gotcha. Okay.
Okay.
Well, full mailbag. Thank you, Doc. I think the Doc needs a glass of water. Yeah. He's been busy. I see smoke coming from the brain cells over there. You're listening to Tech Talk. We will be back in just a moment on Federal News Radio. 1500 AM, 820 AM, 1077 FM HD2, 1035 FM HD2. Stand by. Be right back.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University. Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different.
With campuses in Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford University. Just start it and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. And now it is time for
Profiles in IT.
Yes, today we're going to be talking about John McCarthy. Now, John McCarthy was a computer scientist and cognitive scientist, and he coined the term artificial intelligence, or AI.
Mm-hmm.
He invented also the Lisp programming language that was used to program many of the AI applications. I'm featuring John this week because he died this last week. And after a very, very long and productive life. And so I thought I would go back and sort of recap his life and what he'd accomplished. John McCarthy was born in Boston, Massachusetts, September 4th, 1927, to an Irish immigrant father and a Lithuanian Jewish immigrant mother. So he's one of this first generation born in this country. His family moved all around the country during the Depression. They finally ended up out in Los Angeles, where his father worked as a union organizer. But he was quite a bright guy. He graduated from Belmont High School out in California 2 months or 2 years early, which, you know, from graduating high school 2 years early is quite good. He showed an early aptitude for mathematics. And while he was just a teenager and in high school, he taught himself math by studying textbooks used at Caltech. So when he finally did enroll in Caltech, which was one of the local schools there where he was operating, he was able actually to skip the first 2 years of math because he had taught himself those math classes. Now, he was expelled from Caltech for failure to attend phys ed classes. I'm thinking that I don't really get that.
No,
I don't really get that. There's more to that story. But that's all that I could pick up when I was searching around. Then he went in and he joined the Army. And after serving in the Army for 2 years, so he picked up the 2 years that he saved out of high school, he was readmitted to Caltech. Now, mm-hmm. this time, right on schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And he received a Bachelor of Science in Mathematics in 1948. Which not too bad. That was 4 years, so he actually went through college quite fast, mm-hmm. considering that he was in the Army part of that time.
Right.
Now, in 1948, he attended a symposium that brought together computer scientists, psychologists, and cognition scientists. And at that conference, they had Alan Turing, who is, of course, one of the computer scientists that we featured earlier.
Yes.
Claude Shannon, who's a signal processing expert, and psychologist Carl Lashy. And this was a huge moment in McCarthy's life. He realized that this idea of machine intelligence was fascinating to him. And it occurred to McCarthy, who was then working on his doctorate in mathematics from Princeton, that using purely mathematics and logic, he could make machines that would have the ability to think like humans. And that was the genesis of the idea of artificial intelligence. He received his PhD in mathematics from Princeton in 1951. Now, he also conceived the idea of computer sharing. This was long before computer sharing was popular. And his contributions in computer time sharing have been described as something that was very instrumental to the development of the Internet. And also, of course, it's a precursor to what we now call cloud computing. In 1956, this is 5 years after he's got his PhD, he organized the first international conference on artificial intelligence. And actually, that's where the name AI came from. He named it when he created this conference.
Hmm.
So he basically created this field. One of the attendees at that first conference on artificial intelligence was Marvin Minsky, who later became one of the leading theorists in the field. Now, he joined McCarthy at MIT in 1959. In 1958, he proposed a program called Advice Taker, which inspired later work on question and answering logic programming, sort of like Siri in the iPhone is. You know, you ask Siri a question, and she answers, and I've been having fun with her all week.
Oh, I don't think I want to know about this.
And so he started working on that. He invented a garbage collection program to solve some of the problems in Lisp. See, one of the problems with when you write software is that occasionally there's memory, allocated memory that needs to be released again,
mm-hmm.
and you need to go back wherever you've got a program and try to clean up and release memory that's been used but wasn't properly released, and that's typically called garbage collection. So they go around and kind of clean things up. And so he did some garbage collection algorithms, and that was a key problem they had with Lisp. He actually proposed and invented the programming language Lisp. Now, Lisp stands for list programming, where the L-I-S comes from list, and the P comes from programming. So it's Lisp, L-I-S-P. And that was a programming language based on Lambda calculus, which is a sort of lambda calculus, is like a logic. It's a method of logic, and so he was able to embed the logic into this list program, because whenever you're trying to write an artificial intelligence program, like you might say birds fly in the air. I see something flying in the air. With flapping its wings, it must be a bird. And you would say it can't be a tank because a tank doesn't fly.
No.
And so you have rules. So you have all this list of rules when you're trying to make decisions. And so Lisp was a very good language for analyzing these rules. And there's a logic behind it, because if this is true and that's true and that's true, then this must be true. So this is where this lambda calculus comes from, where you apply the logic to the rules in order to draw the conclusion. So this is a top-down kind of view of intelligence, of AI. And Lisp rapidly became the programming language of choice for all AI applications. Now, people in the beginning had this huge belief that they could make intelligent computers. It turned out that artificial intelligence is a much more difficult problem than they originally anticipated. And this top-down approach to programming artificial intelligence has not been wildly successful in getting the most sophisticated intelligence out there, because it's very difficult to reduce everything to a set of rules. Frequently, you don't even know what the rules are. And so there was There was another trend in artificial intelligence that was kind of bottom up, where it was based on artificial neural networks, where It's where you would basically train them, and you would just simply expose the neural network to various sensory inputs, and it would look at patterns. And based on these patterns, it would then be looking for correlations, drawing inferences. And you can actually train a neural network to do, say, target recognition, to do some very sophisticated processing tasks, but you don't have a single rule. It discovers its rules as it looks at the data. So there were really two approaches to this artificial intelligence. One, you have this super genius programmer who can invent so many rules and the logic that he can recreate intelligence, or you have a method where you let the machine itself discover the relationships through kind of a bottom-up thing, and there are really no written rules. And I think what we're going toward in the future is kind of a combination of the two. Because the artificial neural network, that's parallel processing, and the rule-based system, that's more serial processing. And if you look at how the brain works, you know, we have left brain, right brain. One side of the brain is all parallel processing, and that's where we get all of the feelings and all the sensory inputs. The other hemisphere of the brain is kind of the logic, and that's where you say, okay, I better pick up better pick up milk before I get home today. And so you've actually got sort of the AI side, which is the logic side, and then you've got the parallel processing side, which is the artificial neural network side. And so actually the brain has both of them. So we'll probably have some kind of a hybrid deal here, but we haven't achieved full intelligence yet. Now, he had several – now, that aside was over.
Okay.
And so now we're back. Now John McCarthy had – several short appointments at Princeton and at Stanford, then at Dartmouth and MIT. Then finally, he was offered a full-time professorship at Stanford in 1962, and he remained there until he retired in the year 2000. He founded Stratford's Artificial Intelligence Lab, called SAIL, S-A-I-L. In 1966, McCarthy and his team wrote a computer program used to play chess, and they were competing with a chess program that was written in the Soviet Union. So during the Cold War, we were duking it out over chess. he developed a circumscription method using non-monotonic reasoning from 1978 to 1986. And this non-monotonic reasoning is where you can actually, as you begin reasoning, you can discover new things and you can change the logic. So you can actually change the logic as you go forward based on what you discover. And so it's a more complicated kind of thing. And so you try to build some self-discovery into it. Now, he loved to go on the Usenet forums. You know, in the old days, before we had blogs, we had Usenet forums. These were like threaded discussions. This was like when the internet was really all text. And he used to go on Usenet forums. And his favorite Usenet forum was recreation.arts.books. And they call those the RAB group. And the RAB group, he would like post things a lot there. He just really enjoyed that. He received several major honors, including the Association for Computing Machinery's prestigious AM Turing Award in 1971. Interesting, because Alan Turing was the guy that kind of got him started in this at that first conference. He got the Kyoto Prize in 1988 and the National Medal of Science in 1990. So this is a man who was one of the true innovators in the area of artificial intelligence, and we're still learning what the potentials of LISP and some of the other inventions are.
Hope you're paying attention, because your chance to answer a question regarding our profiles in IT today and thus win a fabulous prize is coming up right next here on Tech Talk. You're listening to Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, and 103.5 FM HD2. We will be right back.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
A According to the U.S. Bureau of Labor, five of the 30 occupations projected to grow the fastest by 2016 are IT-related, led by network and data communications analysts, software engineers, and systems analysts. 70% of business technology professionals surveyed by Information Week say there is a shortage of IT talent in the U.S. today. However, if you have previous military or management experience, there are tremendous opportunities for you in the IT field if you retrain. Stratford University's bachelor's degree in information technology prepares you to analyze, design, implement, administer, and secure computer networks and information systems. Master's degrees are also offered in information systems and software engineering. Day and evening classes are offered so you can continue in your current field. Call Stratford University at 800-444-0804 or visit online at stratford.edu. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University, Tyson's Corner in Woodbridge.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the Internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
It's time for Washington's most popular and longest-running radio game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now, here's your host and star of our show. No, it's not Gene Rayburn. It's not Alex Trebek. It's not Richard Dawson. It's Dr. Richard Schertz.
You thought this was a radio show, but oh no.
No, it's not.
It is not a radio show.
Not even close.
No, it's not even close to a radio show. It is a classroom of the airways and of the Internet. And, of course, when there's a class, there will be a quiz.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the nice thing about this class and this quiz is that if you get the correct answer to the quiz, not only do you get an A, but you also get two tickets to fine dining to either the Escoffier Dining Room or the Karim Dining Room. One is, of course, at our Tyson's Corner campus, the other at the Woodbridge campus. Now, earlier in the show, I was talking about John McCarthy. He, of course, is one of the originators of artificial intelligence. And he invented the Lisp programming language. Now, where did the name Lisp come from?
Uh-huh.
If you get the right answer to that, you will receive two tickets to fine dining, and you can reach us by going through our connection on Skype. That would be Tech Talk Radio 1, and that call will be forwarded directly to the studio. And there's a more conventional way to reach us, too.
I was going to use exactly that word. The more conventional way to reach us would be by picking up the stinking telephone and calling us at the following number, 877-936-9333, 877-936-9333. Once again, the number, 877-936-9333.
Now, Groupon, this week, Groupon issued their IPO. Groupon, of course, is this company that will send out local deals. It's like a local marketing deal, and every morning, if you sign up for Groupon, you'll get some deal in your neighborhood. And as soon as enough people, you know, sign up for the deal, then it goes active. And you get, you know, get a notice every day. Well, they were the ones that really developed this localized marketing. Now, Google's trying to get into it. Yahoo's trying to get into it. So people were wondering whether they could actually maintain their lead. And it turned out that last year, Google offered them $6 billion. And many thought that they were foolish to turn that $6 billion down from mm-hmm. Google just last year, because the company's only been around for 3 years. I mean, that's a pretty good rate of return, to $6 billion.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they turned it down. They said, no, we're going to do an IPO. So this week, they actually had the IPO. The IPO started had an initial offering price of $20. By the end of the first day, it went up to $26.11. That was a 31% jump. That gave them a market cap of $16.7 billion. So that's looking pretty good compared to the $6 billion that Google turned them. So now had offered them. So now, I guess now that they have a market cap of $16 billion, we can say they were wise to turn down the $6 billion. I didn't actually think they were wise to do it. Now, it turns out Groupon's not even making any money. They're losing money. And it's not clear how they're going to begin making money. Actually, I don't know for sure that they're going to make money. But at a $16 billion valuation, they're now their valuation is as big as Yahoo. It's 10 times the valuation of AOL, and it's 15 times the size of the valuation of the New York Times.
Wow.
Now this to me looks kind of like a dot-com bubble kind of deal.
Mm-hmm.
But these guys are happy. They had big grins when they were on the at NASDAQ. This is when they actually had the thing. Now, they are losing money. They've had to restate their financials, and their business model really isn't clear. But, it's a good speculative kind of investment. I'm not going to be investing, but apparently many others are.
Okay. We don't have a winner yet, so we're looking for the answer to the question, which is, where did the term Lisp programming language come from? If you know the answer to that question, call us now, 877-936-9333, 877-936-9333.
Now, Google does a barrel roll. This is kind of cute. If you go into either a Chrome browser or a Foxfire browser, which actually follow the standards perfectly, and you type in Google, do a barrel roll, the Google search will come up for do a barrel roll, but when it comes up, the whole web page starts spinning around like a barrel roll before it comes up. So they actually do a barrel roll when they deliver the product. Now, it doesn't work for Microsoft Explorer. It only, didn't work for MS Explorer, but it did work in Chrome, mm-hmm. and it worked in Foxfire. So, you know how Googlers, they're given 20% of their time just to develop new and innovative things.
Yeah.
So this was apparently part of the 20% of one of the Googlers. He wrote the code to do the barrel roll.
Pretty wild.
And that's kind of an interesting deal.
Well, guess what? This is the first time ever. We've been doing the show together like 4.5 years. We don't have a winner this week.
Oh, my goodness.
So anyway, I'll throw the question out one more time in case somebody gets it over the break. Call us at 877-936-9333. The question, where does the term Lisp programming come from? 877-936-9333. This is Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 1077 FM HD2, 1035 FM HD2. We will be right back.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University.
Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different.
With campuses in Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford University. Just start it and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We're in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology.
And I think in a second we're going to have a winner. Yeah, I think this line is ready to go. Let's go to line number one. This is Jim calling from Bowie, Maryland. Jim, good morning to you. Are you there?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Dr. Schertz, go ahead and ask the question.
Yeah, earlier in the show, I talked about John McCarthy. Of course, he was the inventor of Lisp programming language. Where did the name Lisp come from?
It came from Lisp processing.
That's correct.
That's close.
It's close enough.
It's close enough.
Jim, you bailed us out.
That's right.
Okay. All right. Okay, very good. Dr. Schertz, tell Jim what he's won.
It's actually Lisp programming.
Okay.
It's close, but you're going to win anyway. You'll win two tickets to Fine Dining, the Escoffier Dining Room, Jim. Just stay on the line and give your name and address to Andrew, and we'll get those tickets out to you next week.
Close matters in hand grenades and tech talk. So there you go. Okay, so Jim wins. Good. That the string is unbroken then.
Excellent.
Exactly.
That is
good. All right, so let us continue on. We have limited time.
I think we have to talk about Dooku.
Okay.
D-U-Q-U. That's the Dooku virus that was linked to Microsoft Word documents. Now, a new virus has been found in various countries around the world, and its target appears to be corporate networks. The Dooku virus, first noted last month by a laboratory at Budapest University, has been spotted in several other countries and appears to be sent via Microsoft Word documents that are attached as emails. Now, the point of the new virus seems to be to gather corporate information and send it to some unknown site. Thus, it's a form of corporate espionage. Researchers at Symantec say it looks like some of the code in the virus is the same as that was found in the Stuxnet virus that wreaked havoc on Iran's nuclear program last year. It indicates that the perpetuators, the people who wrote the code, were either able to obtain that code from the virus or are the same people. You know, there's been some interesting word that the Chinese and the Russians have been doing corporate espionage to try to get our secrets. I mean, this could also be part of this kind of ring, because this was probably developed by the security agency at a country level. It's a very sophisticated virus. Now, this virus is activated when a person to whom an infected Word document is sent opens it. The virus infects a computer and then seeks out other computers through the corporate network. As it goes, it collects data and then apparently seeks a path to the Internet where it can send the data that is collected back to a predefined location. Now, this is pretty sophisticated because, you know, many of the viruses would have to have an Internet access to go back. But it turns out that if a computer does not have Internet access, it sends back the data via thumb drives or over a local network to another computer. And so either through thumb drives or through the local network, it actually will connect to the computer by jumping through several other computers on the way back. So it's a very sophisticated way to communicate back to some central location. Now, this thus far, it has relied on a so-called zero-day exploit to take advantage of a previously unknown weakness in the Windows kernel. Now, it appears that the virus has targeted specific types of companies, as the data collecting part of the virus seems to seek out information pertaining to industrial control systems. Now, that's very similar to Stuxnet, too. So it's likely whoever unleashed the virus did so in hopes of gaining information on how companies were designing and manufacturing their products, not something the average person would need to worry about. Now, instances of this virus have been seen in Iran, India, France, Ukraine, and the UK, and at least 8 other countries. Microsoft released a workaround, but they still have not fixed the patch. Microsoft says they're working on a patch. It's probably not going to be ready for this month's Tuesday update, but hopefully it will be ready for next month's Tuesday update. Well, it looks like we're just about out of time. Listen, we love your emails. Send your emails to techtalk@stratford.edu. And also check out the techtalkonline.com. You can download the podcast and go to stratford.edu and check out our programs.
Yep, and thank you for listening this week. We will be back next week with the best of program because we have some maintenance going on in the studio next week. But we'll be back then, and you can hear this show rebroadcast tomorrow at 4 p.m.
Learn more about Stratford University Program's consumer information by visiting their website at www.stratford.edu/content_pages/view/degree-programs.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of Washington Nationals baseball, Washington Capitals hockey, the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, and American University Eagles basketball. Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m., the Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics, and your source for federal news now.
Navy football on the air today. Our coverage starts at 1:30, and then the Caps against the Islanders in New York at 7 o'clock tonight. It's going to be sunny today, high 52, 41 now.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News